one could grow weary of polar bear meat. They had boiled the meat, lungs, blubber, kidneys, brains, intestines, stomach, and the contents of the stomach. They had sautéed the tongue, and they had roasted the heart. They had eaten the meat raw with a sprinkling of salt, which resulted in a flavor not unlike that of oysters. When they tired completely of the meat, they mixed together bear's blood and oatmeal and fried the patties in butter. Blood pancakes. Everything was palatable, they had determined, if it were fried in butter. They had also determined that the ice was moving west faster than they were walking east. They had determined that when opium failed to cure an intestinal disorder, morphine may prevail. Newt had privately determined that he was in love with Anna, Neil's fiancée. Initially, Newt was none too impressed by the photograph Niels kept in a locket, tucked into his oilskin so it would be nearer to his heart. Her nose was a bit too round for Newt's taste, her jaw too mannish, her hair simultaneously too tame, tucked in a bun, and too unkempt. The stray hairs that escaped were frizzy. Niels said that he was in love with her for her mind, and Newt thought, a bit cruelly, that he could see why. But over time his sentiment had shifted, slowly yet monumentally, like the ice fields that stretched around them. Every day since their balloon had crashed 3 months earlier, as they dragged their heavy sledges through the frozen wilderness, as they fell into crevasses and nearly drowned in canals, as they suffered from frostbite and foot ulcers and snow blindness, Neil spoke lovingly of her wit, her gentleness, her musical talent, her optimism. Newt began to long for her smile, her voice, her touch. In his mind, she was always sympathetic to their perils, and she always reassured him that he was doing the best he could. Andre alone was unmoved. He declared that he would never marry, because a wife would naturally try to dissuade him from going away on adventures. At this moment, Newt was prepared to trade a life of adventure for the love of a good woman. To think, only a few months ago, he had leapt at the chance to undertake an expedition with the bold aeronaut S.A. Andre. In the weeks preceding their departure, Newt had woken each morning giddy with the prospect of flight. Him in a hot air balloon. Him in a race to the North Pole. Many were the men clambering to reach the pole by boat or sledge, but only Andre was visionary enough to make the journey by air. Or the only one foolish enough. He turned his attention to the task at hand and prodded the chunks of polar bear in the pot over the fire. Andre had fashioned him a new fork out of thick wire. The previous bear's meat had been so tough, it had broken his utensil. Today had been a particularly frustrating day. First, their sledges had gotten stuck, so they had to chop tracks in the snow. After a few hours, they had covered barely half a mile, and then they hit a channel of water that was too large to pass. They had dragged some ice floes in an attempt to make a bridge, but none of the floes were big enough. Then they had wasted time scouting a new route with no luck. Finally, they piled everything into their precarious little boat and paddled across, only to find the terrain on the other side was even more uneven than their morning route. Andre and Niels were bent over their respective journals. Newt stood and winced. The blister on his left foot throbbed. He limped to the tent and collected his weather instruments. He opened his ledger and wrote, "The 14th of September, 1897. He recorded the temperature, moisture, wind speed, and air pressure. He shivered. The sun sat low in the sky. The nights were getting longer. It was dark for nearly 3 hours a night now. If they failed to make it home by winter, they could spend months in perpetual darkness. He wondered, did the afterlife have a temperature? And if so, was it variable? The smell of meat sizzling snapped him out of his thoughts. He put his ledger away and rubbed his hands together. "Dinner's ready," he said. They had long abandoned their separate mess tins, and they circled around the pot and stabbed at the chunks of meat. When they finished eating, Niels cleaned the pot and utensils, and Andre prepared the tea. Niels's sledge, carrying the remaining reserves of sugar, had fallen in a slush pile the previous week, but they had grown accustomed to the bitter taste. Newt was in the habit of reading Neil's journal. which took the form of letters to Anna. He tried to look casual as he found today's entry. "My dear Anna," Niels had written. He went on to complain about how little distance they had covered, but insisted he was happy, as even a short distance brought them that much closer to her. He described their brief journey in the boat as a relief, to glide over the smooth surface of the water, to see his reflection staring back at him, a reminder that he was still there. Knut mouthed the words, felt the weight of them in his mouth. He imagined crossing out Niels's name and replacing it with his own. "My dear Anna," he thought, again and again. All day he had viewed the landscape as awful, but now, intended for Anna's eyes, it bloomed into a smorgasbord of natural wonders, filled with icy bridges and fountains and staircases, as though carved by a phantom hand. He read Andre's journal as well, so as not to arouse suspicion. Andre was already planning his next expedition. He had sketched a new balloon, making some adjustments to the steering ropes. That night, huddled in the shared sleeping sack, the warmth of Neil's thighs flushed against his own, Knut wondered, to Anna, if Andre wasn't a little mad. She agreed it was more than possible. But, Knut wondered, was a bit of madness perhaps a prerequisite for greatness? Did the majority of the populace not think William Harvey mad for proposing blood circulated through the heart? And Galileo for proposing the earth circled the sun? Even if a bit of madness was a prerequisite for greatness, reasoned Anna, it was not necessarily an indicator. Knut wondered if there was a great man inside of him. He had thought there must be, that Andre had seen it, and that's why he had selected him to join the expedition. Knut had always hoped there was a wellspring of greatness buried in him, that if the world chipped away long and hard enough, it would spring forth. "Greatness isn't discovered," Anna said. "Greatness is made, layer by layer. Greatness takes work. Do you think Beethoven woke up from a nap and coughed out the Fifth Symphony?" Knut wondered if greatness was what he really sought. As a boy, it was easy to play at greatness. Nobody wants to be an ordinary man until you are stumbling snowblind through an Arctic desert. "But what is greatness?" he asked Anna. "You ask 100 different men," she said, "and you'll get 100 different answers." "What if you ask a woman?"
"Come closer," she said.